Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. Steve and I are together again. Doing a lot of shows face to face. It's been nice. Yeah, it's been nice. All right. So before we get into the political topics that are occurring,
we used to have music on our show. God, that was so great. But YouTube ruined everything.
Oh yeah, I still liked our old intro with the movie clips, but that was me. But anyway, before we get into events, well, this is an event. Representative John Lewis, civil rights leader, I think 30 years in Congress from Georgia, passed away last night. And obviously, he's an iconic figure. He was not currently serving in Congress because of his illness, so it wasn't a total shock, but still, a passing of a legend. And, you know, what are your thoughts?
It's hard. You know, John Lewis is someone that I always admired. And a lot of people are going to say that, but I met John Lewis in 1998. I was 17 at the time. And, you know, early in my high school career, I went to another school for a short period of time, in my area, and, a friend of mine and I, we had some issues there, race related. You know, I think he arguably got it a lot worse than I did, but I mean, the situation was very hostile. You know, a lot of nigger bombs being dropped. He was Puerto Rican, so he got a lot of shit his way about that. And it all culminated with us, like the last day of school, literally being jumped by, I mean, it wasn't even jumped. I mean, the school, it was a 3,000 person school, and there were easily a few hundred kids that were out to get us because there were all sorts of reasons. Sports, he was dating a white girl that it just felt like that shouldn't have happened. Yes, and this is in the 90s, people, in Ohio, this actually happened. And so you had all these kids that were out there, literally it was so bad that the administration knew what was going to happen, didn't do anything about it, but told us that we could leave school, you know, 20 minutes early on the last day, so we could get out of there, which we did. But his little brother went to the middle school, so we had to get his little brother. And then by the time we got his little brother out, like there, this giant group of people, like hundreds of kids, had formed, and we're like, oh shit, right? Like there's just no way we're gonna make it out. His dad gets there at the last second, pulls up. I remember he had a blue Beretta, right? And if you remember the Beretta, it was like a 2-door car, not very big. And I, as my friends will tell you, was the same size then as I am now. And so we had to, like, it wasn't much of a fight. Like, I mean, they had started to scream and yell. They threw stuff at us. I got hit in the head with a can. My buddy got hit over the back with something. But we got in his dad's car and, you know, drove off. Now, mind you, there were us two, right, and his little brother, and all these kids form, they drive off. Well, the school district then said that we insinuated a riot, and they expelled us from school. Us.
Yeah.
The two of us. Just us.
You starting it, right.
Right. Like, so because, like, these kids didn't like us because of, you know, race, all this other shit, they said we started this riot and they expelled us from school. So we fought it. We wrote letters to state reps, like everybody. Congress, Rainbow Push Coalition, everybody. Didn't get a lot of response. We ended up leaving that school. That's how I ended up at Youngstown Ursuline, which was a great thing to happen. And he ended up going to a different school than I did, which was unfortunate and sucks. But we still kind of tried to fight it. And then eventually this all culminates with us being invited by Bill Clinton's administration to the National Hate Crime Convention then. And I might be getting like, I feel like it was 98, but it might've been 97, right? Like, so this thing happened my freshman year. And then this, hate crime convention, I think it happened in like, it was either 97 or 98. I can't remember. So, we go to it. Which was crazy, right? Like, so the White House calls my house, right? Like, I'm a high school kid, and it's like, oh, this is so-and-so from the White House, and we're calling blah, blah, blah. I hung up on him. I thought it was bullshit, so I hang up on him, and then the phone, and this is back when you had a house phone, right? Like, sure. It was a cordless phone, like the big cordless phone with the big antenna, and so then they call right back, and then they say, no, sir, this is blah, blah, so-and-so from the, I'm sure it was probably like an intern, but it wasn't Monica, and they explain what's going on, so I'm like, okay, and they're like, you're going to get this packet in the mail. And then, you know, you fill it out. We'll need to do a background check on you and blah, blah, blah. And it's you and your, you know, your friend and his mom and whatever. So we go, right? Like, we clear the background check. This was in high school before I'd done anything shady. And we go to the White House and met Bill Clinton, met Ted Kennedy, met John Lewis, I bet you'll be able to know. I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy who wrote the story and the story that American History X was about.
I'm not going to come up with that guy's
name. Oh, my God. I can't. I should remember it. But we actually met and talked to him for a long time because our situation, we like there was like a small connection there. And he looks nothing like
Edward Norton.
No, he's kind of like, you know, yellowish blonde hair, had like a crew cut, like kind of like the black Malcolm X glasses. Anyway. But I met John Lewis there and at that particular event, and, it was a brief encounter, but he just, cause we were some of the youngest people there, right? Sure. I mean, we were teenagers, and we didn't get a chance to really speak on a broad stage to like the greater group, but we got to be at a lot of different events and listen. And then we were able to ask questions and kind of talk a little bit. But I got to talk to John Lewis briefly, and he asked why, you know, I was there, and I explained it to him. And, you know, he said, listen, your greatest weapon that you have is your mind. He's like, you have these muscles and you're a strong young man, but you need to make sure that that muscle in your head is stronger than any other muscle that you have. And if that, as long as that remains true, then you'll never be defeated.
Okay.
And I mean, I was, I don't know, 16, 17 years old at the time. And I didn't know at the time, like I knew who John Lewis was, but I didn't know right. his legacy. I didn't know everything. I didn't, it felt like, it's like, wow, that sounds good. That's powerful. Right.
Sure.
And I always, it was one of those things where you kind of fold up and you tuck away and you're just like, I won't forget it, but I don't know if I have the capacity to really process that statement right now. And I didn't. I was just too young. But obviously, as I got older, had more experiences, get through law school, get to, you know, have some of the things, the experiences that I've had, it just has always stayed with me.
I'm sure.
And I just, so for me, what this is just, on the one hand, it's the passing of a legend, but I think, you know, John Lewis has fought his entire life so that I could have mine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to deal with that shit my freshman year, and that sucked. And, you know, there's fights that I've had, some, you know, but I've never experienced oppression like black people experience in the everything the 60s, leading up to yeah. the '60s, right? I haven't. Yeah, there's racism and you have to deal with pockets here and there and, you know, anecdotal bullshit and things that you perceive, but you never know what the actual reality is. But I never had to deal with what that man dealt with in reality. And so, the way I see it is that, you know, someone who fought their entire life for me to live my life, now that guy gets a chance to rest. And people like me who he's, like his experiences with Martin Luther King, and guys like Malcolm X and all that what that allows me to do is pick up the mantle. Now, will I ever accomplish the things that he has? Will I ever be that great or recognized? Fuck no. There's just no, no.
It's a pretty high bar.
Right. That's a high bar. But I mean, I can keep that spirit when I'm working just at my local level in my neighborhood in my area. And so I see this as an opportunity for a guy who's fought his whole life to finally rest. And, you know, it just sends it out as kind of like a heads up to everybody else. Like, you know, we lost a great one. So you need to pick your game up.
Yeah. You know, he was on. So because of him passing, the Daily Show showed a clip of him talking to Trevor Noah. And he said that he had been arrested 40 times in his life. And five of them while he was a member of Congress. And he told the story. There's a famous picture of him being booked in Nashville, Tennessee. And in that picture, he's wearing a very nice suit. And he told him the story. He said he went to a secondhand store and bought that suit for like $5 right before the march because he knew he was likely to get arrested and he wanted to look good.
Right.
He said, I looked sharp and I spent $5 on that. He said, today I probably could saw that on eBay for whatever. I'm right. Like, that's kind of funny that he looks at it that way. But yeah, it's a momentous passing. And I think that's the right attitude is don't let his efforts die in vain.
Right.
And another person I'm very concerned about, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, is out of the hospital, mm-hmm. but she spent some time in there. She's been diagnosed with having her liver cancer, I think, returned. I think she fought it once and then.
Yeah.
And she's an iconic person. And just because of her significance and her role in the Supreme Court right now, Ruth, hang in there. Come on. We need you.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's.
We can't let Trump get another.
Well, yeah. I can't
stop it either, by the way.
Well, look, I you know, my thing with this is, you know, I said it in 2015, I said it in 2016, but elections have consequences, and the biggest consequences are the courts, right?
Yep.
For everything else everybody wants to talk about, like, the biggest consequence, the shit that actually impacts your day-to-day life are the things that happen in the courts. Right. So that's why your presidential elections and even your local elections have consequences. The people you put in your local courts, because the reason why is because you never know when you might end up in court or when you might need, you know, something that involves a judge or whatever. And that's why your, you know, voting matters and understanding who you're voting for matters. And so, you know, this is, you know, it's important to note. She is still alive. I think she should be able to still continue her duties. I mean, we'll have to watch it, but this is why these elections are so important. And if you don't trust Trump to put in someone, that you feel is going to, you know, rule in your best interest, this is why it's important for you to get out to vote. You know, I would note that I think, you know, to a degree, Gorsuch and a little bit with Kavanaugh have surprised some people, especially conservatives on the right, with not just falling directly in line with Trump's agenda, with the way they've ruled. I would also be wary I would warn people on the left that have, you know, identified Kavanaugh or people in the media who have identified Kavanaugh or Gorsuch and said, oh, look, they're actually going against Trump and they're fighting. Well, if you look at the way that they're making some of these decisions, a lot of them are on administrative type issues or technical technicalities and not necessarily ruling on the merits. So we're not, I don't think you've seen a full shift with them. I think they're waiting for the right circumstances to kind of make some of these more monumental decisions. And so I think it is still very important that we pay attention to who, obviously who's on the court, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's health. And it's important that if you don't trust Trump to put someone in that's going to rule in your favor, then you need to get out and vote.
I know so many Bernie bros who are, you know, prior to shutdown, would be sitting next to me at a bar, and they were pissed. We got screwed again. This is bullshit. I'm not voting for this. I've seen two guys in particular I'm friends with just have utter meltdowns, and I know they're not alone. And every time they say to me, give me one reason to vote for Biden, I say, Supreme Court nominees. And that usually ends the conversation.
Yeah.
And it should, because this fucking matters, guys. Throw in your tantrum because you love Bernie and you got screwed again, which actually this time you kind of didn't.
This time you didn't. Like the DNC actually made the rules, like they took the rules that Bernie wanted changed and changed them in his favor. Bernie is not the nominee because the people didn't come out and fucking vote for him.
Right.
Right. Like you can't blame. Now, listen, coronavirus may have had an impact there, late. But, you know, those early states, right, like a lot of that is on your people.
Right.
Right. I mean, like, you guys have an amazing online presence and you talk about all the phone banking you do and look at all the money you raise grassroots. Well, it's not turning into votes. Right. And then they'll sit there and tell you, well, the voting rules are too restrictive. And if we vote, then we'll lose our jobs and we'll lose our health care and we'll die. Right. Like, that's how ridiculous these people get with, you know, their excuses for why Bernie's not the nominee. Bullshit. Right. If this means so goddamn much to you, if you believe that Bernie is going to be able to snap his fingers and get health care for all just because you've managed to get him to be the president elect or the nominee or get him elected, then if it's that important to you, then you take your shift at Burger King, you take off your shift at the bar, or you take off your shift at the restaurant, or one of your million jobs, because apparently you're a millennial or younger, and you've got 42 jobs, and all of them are the most critical, and you have absolutely no time to vote, which is an actual complete bullshit excuse, right? I'm sorry, it's a bullshit excuse, especially if you're in Ohio, because in Ohio, you could have fucking voted early.
Right.
Right?
I mean, I think, like, in most states, you can.
Right. Like, I mean, you could do mail-in ballots or whatever, as much as people are talking shit about it. Like, for the primaries, you can. So there's plenty of ways to get your vote in, and you didn't do it. Right? Like, so, and there's no other excuse for it. Like, no matter what you say, like, it's just your people didn't come out and vote for him. So nobody fucking wanted him. There's not a mandate for him. Maybe there's a mandate online, but it didn't translate to the place where it fucking matters in the ballot.
The one thing the DNC did do is they cleared out the field and said, make it a mano-a-mano versus what happened when Trump got nominated in the Republican Party, where it was a shit show of eight guys on stage until it was too late and the one extreme guy was able to gobble up delegates. But speaking of bullshit, the amount of bullshit I've heard lately is amazing, whether it's Facebook or you know, random dude on the street or guy at the bar. The crazy shit that's getting said out there and is just mind-numbing to me. And the one thing that really amazes me is I thought the whole Bill Gates is behind this whole thing was done. I'd heard people say that early on. One time when we were still in we just come out of lockdown, because I couldn't have been there. We had just come out of lockdown, and I'm in my Irish pub. And some guy mutters as he walks past me, we should just drag Bill Gates out of the public square and hang the motherfucker. And I'm like, no, that's really not the greatest idea. Right. And the conspiracies I thought were going to go away,
no,
they're getting stronger.
Right.
I mean, it's fucking – and it's so dumb. I mean, Bill Gates is trying to inject us with a microchip is one of them. Now I've heard he's trying to – kill people selectively and just...
Yes, he wants to... Like, he literally, they've decided that Bill Gates is Thanos and wants to reduce the Earth's population. They haven't explained why. Now, Bill Gates has, on a TED Talk, Bill Gates said, basically, the Earth is overpopulated. We are consuming resources at a rate that essentially will mean we're going to run out eventually and we need to have a plan for it. Bill Gates has also talked about in TED Talks, like, listen... a worldwide pandemic would be devastating to the economy and to the social structure and the social fabric of the world.
Right.
Right? He said that back in 2014. You know why he said it?
Because he's a really smart guy. He knows this shit.
Because we had just come off, like, we had just come off dealing with SARS. Okay. Right. And SARS, like, people forget that SARS was actually a really big fucking deal.
Yeah.
Like, people want to downplay it, like, oh, the media didn't cover it because of Obama. No, the media did cover it. They asked a lot of questions about Obama. The media criticized Obama because they didn't think that he covered it right initially. And Obama responded in kind multiple times in actual action in terms of having a plan. Like a written plan on how to deal with it the next time that it occurred, by having reserves, by doing all these sorts of things. Like, Obama put this stuff into place, and not because Bill Gates said so, because he experienced it as president and said, I'm going to learn from this, and so that either if it happens to me again or whoever's in place next, they don't have to deal with the missteps that we did. Right. Now, did Trump listen? Obviously not, right? But the point is that it was there. And then as it relates to Bill Gates, yes, he did talk about it happening, you know, how 6-7 years ago, because he's a guy who just watched it happen like the rest of the world did. You know, when he was just like, listen, if it was something worse, right, that was deadlier, it would have an even greater impact. So we need to have a plan. We need to be prepared. You know, like, so we need to have a way to mobilize vaccines, and we need to wait, we need to move faster. Otherwise, it's really going to hurt us. And here we are in 2020, the year of Johnny Manziel, basically, right? If 2020 was a person, it would be Johnny Manziel. And so here we are in this clusterfuck. Bill Gates is out there trying to, you know, help fix the situation, you know, and people are so paranoid about things that they don't know and that they don't control, that if they don't understand it, that they have to turn it into a conspiracy theory. It's got to be the worst possible nefarious thing. Listen, the DNC isn't behind, the Democrats aren't behind right. this master plot. You know why? Because they're fucking morons, right? The Democrat, they're fucking idiots. These people aren't that bright, right? Like, they're not. Andrew Cuomo, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck fucking Schumer, these people are not that fucking bright that they're going to be able to put together this master plan to take over the world that involves input from around the world, right? That you need governments from Europe to Australia to New Zealand, right? And then they're going to do all of this in for what?
Oh, well, so I never heard that answer.
Right. Well, it's so that they can control us, and then that the government, that the people are reliant on the government. And then what? Exactly what? And so what does that do? Well, it keeps them in power.
Well, first of all, I agree with you. It's funny to me because you almost have to – the amount of mental gymnastics you have to do to say this is happening because of the Democrats, when Republicans control the White House and the Senate, a lot of governors – I mean, I think it's distinctly more Republican governors than Democratic governors across the country. And the idea that they're – okay, first of all, the Democrats approve that they can't get their shit together and organize and be in the same, you know, march and lockstep on anything, which in some ways is good.
But then they also say it's the corporate – you know, it's the corporate overlords.
Okay. Right? Which is where Bill Gates comes in and Jeff Bezos.
That's fine. But a lot of the rich corporate overlords donate to the Republican Party.
True. And also, the idea that Bill Gates is doing this for money, I find hilarious.
Right. Or Jeff Bezos. Jeff Bezos is doing it for money. Okay. Well, dude's going to be the first trillionaire. I mean, maybe it is. Maybe it's just a race to guarantee that he makes it to be the first trillionaire. So he somehow unleashed I don't know. It's exhausting. Right. Jinx, 1, 2, 3, you owe me a Coke. So okay. I don't have anything to – it's just like, look, I get – yeah, there's – I'm sure there's some shady actors out there that are taking advantage of the situation. Absolutely. On very high corporate levels, they're looking at it and they're saying, how can we play this to our advantage? You have that in every possible scenario, big, small. There's always someone looking to take advantage of a crisis, and I'm sure that's happening on multiple levels. You know, is it a coordinated plan by the globalists to take over the world and turn the world into one big unit where we're all, like, humans are puppets and they're trying to turn this into the Matrix, or pick a sci-fi movie? I don't believe that. Maybe, Jim, we just don't see it. Our minds are closed. Right. We took the wrong pill when Samuel Jackson was handing out pills, or Lawrence Fishburne was handing out pills. Whatever.
If I made that mistake, you'd be all over me.
No, I wouldn't. Shut up. You say that all the time about everything. If I did this, blah, blah, blah. Stop right. with your insecurities. But it just – look, man, I it's very – tiresome. And now I'm at a point where I'm not arguing with people, right? You want to come to me with these harebrained, out of the left field, out of the atmosphere theories. I just sit, let you go on your way. If you go a little too far, right? Like, I mean, if you just say something that's so insane, maybe I'll call you on it. Maybe I'll ask you to explain it a little bit more. But I'm not fighting with people over this shit anymore. I'm not, right? Like, what the fuck? What's the point?
I'm with you, but I slip up sometimes.
Yeah, now, I mean,
I never get hostile though. I'll just ask questions like, "What's your source?"
Well, not the mainstream libtard media.
Okay, thank you.
Right. I mean, I don't like it. Just look, are there other sources of information out there besides the mainstream media? Absolutely. Is the mainstream media are they manipulative? Are they pushing narratives? Are they, you know, worried about money? Are they, you know, I mean, you know, like, the mainstream media, just because of the mainstream media, they have plenty of flaws that are
sure
out there, that are open, that are obvious. I've been calling CNN on their bullshit for since before Trump was elected, right? Lie after lie after lie, bullshit story after bullshit story, unvetted story after unvetted story. You know, like CNN to me has no credibility. MSNBC to me has moderately a little bit more, but it's obvious that they're still trying to push a narrative. Same with Fox and OAN, right? Like, so you have to piece all that shit together, then you have to go through, and then you have to look at actual, you know, hard firsthand sources when and if they are available to try to put it all together and see what it means. It is a lot of work, and most people don't want to do that amount of work, so they're willing to take and accept whatever it is, wherever they get their news from, whether it's one of the mainstream or YouTube or whatever.
Alex Jones.
Alex Jones or the Patriot First or whatever thing that they find most comforting that just reiterates what they want to hear, right? You call yourself a free thinker, you call yourself, you know, independent, and you're just seeking the truth. But in reality, you are actually just seeking out whatever reaffirms your belief. I don't care, like, who you are. It doesn't matter. That's what most people are doing. I don't know if it's human nature or what. That's what people are just prone to do. So you have to take all the information with a grain of salt. You have to try to get it from a variety of sources, put it together, and figure out what the truth is.
Yeah. And I mean, I try to do my best to watch, you know, OAN and Fox along with CNN. I almost never watch MSNBC, and there's no particular reason for it other than I basically know what's going to get said. I mean, I think Rachel Maddow is a smart person, but I can pretty much guess what she's going to say on any given night as soon as I hear the topic, so I'm really not interested.
And it's just – it's hard for me to do the primetime cable news. You know, you dig into some of these people and you look at their backgrounds and it's just like, how is this person like qualified to sit here and lecture me on this stuff?
Right.
Right? Like, what gives you – I mean, it's just like, all right, so you went to a good school – and you majored in journalism.
And you were born rich and you knew the right people. Right,
you were born wealthy and then you didn't work anywhere. Like, you were an intern for so-and-so and now you do this.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, like, you look at their backgrounds and it's just like, why the fuck am I letting – like, why does your opinion hold any fucking weight? Right? I mean, it's just like, all right, if you've got people who – you know, were in Congress, who were in Senate, or were, you know, worked in this industry, worked for whatever, aerospace, tech, God, whatever, and have frontline experience in relationships dealing with these people, then okay, right? Like, I mean, you take a guy like...
I'm about to go Tucker Carlson on you, because we got a peek behind the curtain last week at, he's just a script reader.
Yeah.
All these guys are to some degree, I understand, but he literally, like, there was some racist douchebag behind the scenes that was literally bragging that he was Tucker's first thought you hear every day. So he's a...
Right. I mean, yes. I mean, and we've known this about Tucker Carlson, right? But, I mean, you take a guy like John Kasich. Okay, like John Kasich is a guy who's been around. He's, you know, worked for the White House. He, you know, he was the governor of Ohio. He's a guy, he had a show on Fox, something about the Heartland, right? Okay. Like a while ago. But I can at least say, all right, this guy has a certain level of experience, a certain level of knowledge. I may not agree with everything he's saying, but at least I can put something on what he's telling me, that it's coming from a place of experience, whether I agree with the direction he wants to go or not. At least I put a little bit more weight into what he's telling me, as opposed to some of these other people who are just like Chuck Todd.
Okay.
The fuck is Chuck Todd's credit? Like, why the fuck is anyone listening to Chuck Todd on anything? Right? I mean, it just like...
I truly don't know his background, but yeah, I agree with you on him, you know, completely. What? I can't stand
him. Look at his background. Like, why the fuck would I... Like, why am I trusting him to question, you know, these high-powered individuals on things that impact my life day to day? Right? You need to look at these people that you're entrusting to give you information. What the fuck is Sean Hannity's background? Right? Like, he's got great hair. Like, who the fuck cares? You know? I mean, like, you need to literally sit there and think, I don't care what your news source is, right? Conservative, liberal, whatever. Who are the people that are giving you information and what qualifies them to do so? And why is it that you're so enamored with those particular people giving you the information that they are, and why do you trust them?
Right. Well, I'll tell you one thing, though. Like I said, I watch a bunch of different news sources. I'll call them all mainstream because they're all on my cable TV. But I also do a lot of stuff on the internet, and I came across a story that there have been three substantial explosions at military sites in Iran in the last couple weeks.
Right.
I didn't even fucking – I've not heard that once on CNN or Fox.
You know, you sent it to me. I dug a little bit. And so not just military, but the, I mean, these are places that are assumed to be nuclear, you know, places where they're doing
enrichment sites. Yes.
Yeah, nuclear enrichment sites. The Iranian government believes that it is the work of the Israelis with the help of the U.S. And so the question becomes, what is Iran's response? Now, we know Iran has been devastated by this COVID-19 pandemic.
Right.
I don't know.
So apparently they're in on the plot, too.
Right. Right? I mean, Jesus. So, but I don't know, like, I don't know how strong their government is right now. I'm not sure where they, I mean, I know, I, you know, I do know that they made, that they have a warrant out for President Trump's arrest.
I did not know that.
Yeah, they do, over the bombing of Soleimani,
Okay. Yeah.
Which occurred
in Iraq, though, right?
It occurred in Iraq, but he's an Iranian general. So, but yeah, they issued a warrant for his arrest. So, I mean, you know, keep your eyes out for that. That will go nowhere.
Right.
But it will be interesting to see, does Iran respond? And how do they respond? And do they claim responsibility for their response? It's something definitely worth watching. It is interesting that it hasn't gotten more news. I mean, part of that is because COVID-19 is dominating the headlines. You know, along with the economy and other things. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. It's worth keeping an eye on.
And the Trump tit-for-tat shit show that the media has really turned into puts this in the background. If not for that, this would be a huge story. And one thing we know it does, it's going to ramp up Iran's air.
See, I don't know if it would be a huge story.
Really?
Because I think you're putting you're giving a lot of people way too much credit.
Okay.
In terms of their ability to analyze this and see the value and or threat.
Well, remember, Iran shot down a Ukrainian passenger jet a couple years ago because it was in their airspace and they took it as a threat. They're now going to ramp up their airspace. I mean, they shot down one of our drones, which that's a whole different discussion. But you know, this puts people at risk that have no stake in the game.
But this isn't, from a news standpoint, this really isn't sexy because...
Oh, it's not sexy.
Americans aren't dying or Europeans aren't dying. And so
right now,
it's just, you know, things blowing up in Iran. That's not new. You know, call me when it's like really bad and there's U.S. soldiers and we can make a thing out of it. Like, I don't see a scenario where the news actually gives this more than, you know, a blurb.
All right, but you agree that's a huge problem?
I agree that's a problem.
Okay.
I think the story in itself is huge, depending on, now, you know, there are people in the military with military experience who tell you, like, listen, shit like this goes on all the time. A lot of the stuff that the media never even knows about, hears about, or gets a chance to cover. So the fact that, you know, the media, has, like any news source has actually reported this is worth noting and is notable, but... Yeah. This may be the last you hear of it, unless Iran responds and makes a big show of it.
Goes after Israel.
Yeah, I don't think Iran. Like, I don't think Iran's got the gumption for that.
I hope not.
Yeah, but, I don't think that this is going to be the thing that provokes Iran to go after Israel, and I don't think that they're in any sort of condition to do it right now.
All right. Well, it has my hairs on my neck standing up because it really strikes me as this could be a powder keg issue. Now, maybe I'm overplaying it or.
And I think I also think you're giving Iran too much credit in terms of their capabilities.
All right. They make me very nervous. I think
they should make you nervous, but they're dangerous, but, you know, they've got limited range, right? Their organization isn't great and they've got limited range. And
which is why terrorism becomes their option.
Right. But we've kind of seen what they can do. I mean, it's dangerous for our people over there, right, in that vicinity. But we've seen worse. We literally have. Like, and I think that U.S. intelligence has a good feel for Iran and what they're doing and access to their networks. I think they have relatively decent control over them. We'll see where this goes.
All right. Well, it's on my radar. Let's move to domestic issues, though, because the U.S. military has issued a statement on which flags can be displayed on military bases. And it distinctly did not include the Confederate battle flag, which I missed something, but oh well. The Confederate battle flag, I can't believe it was ever allowed on military bases. I mean, I understand that there's lots of guys from the South and they wear that shit. And so do people in the North. I shouldn't do that distinction. But you literally should not be able to fly a flag that flew directly to oppose the flag that you're representing.
Right.
And I'm amazed it took this long for it to happen. The fact that it came out now and the member from the Pentagon, I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Mark Esper.
The fact that he came out and kind of did it and said it in a nuanced way so as not to look like he was stepping on Trump's toes is interesting to me because he's basically tap dancing around his own boss. But anyway, it's done, and I consider that a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, here's my thing with the Confederate flag. Like, if you want to fly it and talk about your heritage, that's fine. Your heritage is treason. Your heritage is slavery. Your heritage is hate. Your heritage is you're an asshole. And if you want to fight me over it, go ahead. I take me over 99% of the people that I'm going to have that conversation with. Sorry. Now, I'm not saying that I'm going to walk up to people and fight them if they have a Confederate flag. But if you present one to me and say, this is my heritage, then I'm just going to tell you what your heritage is. And there's not really an argument that you have that can say that's not it. I love the people in the North that you reference who fly the Confederate flag because it's just like, okay, so what's your connection to the Confederate flag?
Right.
You know, is your family from the South? No, we immigrated here from Scotland and my family's lived in Michigan their whole life. All right, so you have zero connection. You just think the flag is cool. So that's even worse because, again, what the flag represents. You don't have a good argument on what the flag represents anything good, right? Like, you're doing it to be antagonistic. You're doing it to conjure up, an initial feeling and this idea that the flag could represent anything good. You can't call yourself a patriot and love the United States but embrace that flag. Like, you just can't, right? I don't know how many different ways we have to explain that they left the United States. Well, you know, President Lincoln was being aggressive about states' rights. States' rights to do what or not right. Do what? Hold other human beings as slaves, you dipshit, right? Like, and you can't say, well, no, it wasn't that much about slavery. Like, it was literally littered everywhere and everything that was written, it was about slavery, right? Like, it doesn't matter. Right. I mean, and the funny thing is those same people will talk about the Civil War. Well, we died to set you free, so you should be grateful to us. Like, okay, so you're admitting that the Civil War is about slavery. Now we have common ground. Right? I mean, like, so any argument to fucking hold that flag and wave it around, it's treason. It's everything that was wrong with the United States at the time is embraced and represented in that flag. And if you think that that is a good thing, then you are an enemy of me and this country. That is pretty simple.
I completely agree with you. I always got a kick out of the people, and I would see this in West Virginia all the time. And the reason I'm singling out West Virginia is because I went to school there. I would see the Confederate flag, and I'd say to people, like, you know, this state exists because it didn't go along with that, right?
Right.
And the reason West Virginia exists is Virginia seceded, and that part of the state said, nah, we're not doing that shit.
Right.
And yet people will fly the Confederate flag right next to the American flag and not see the irony or the hypocrisy. It's like, wow.
Yeah. It's remnants of this country not dealing with that appropriately when we had the chance. After the Civil War, because, you know, Abe Lincoln and the Reconstructionists, they wanted to bring the country back together. So instead of harsh punishments for, you know, all those who seceded in the South and you know, all the leadership of the Confederacy, instead of the harsh punishments that they should have done across the board to make an example, they embraced him back in. They brought him back in, and they gave him leeway. And then they allowed for these Jim Crow laws, and they allowed for, you know, segregation. And then, you know, in the early 1900s, in the, you know, in the early, in the 20s, during, especially as the civil rights, as black people started to want more civil rights and didn't want to continue to be treated as secondhand citizens, they started erecting these monuments that people are wanting torn down now. Those statues weren't erected right after the Civil War. They came 50, 60 years after the fact as intimidation pieces against civil rights, right? Just as a friendly reminder, like, hey, you guys, look at this. Remember we had this? This was when things were great, right? So you guys settle down, right? It could have been worse. You could be slaves. At least you're, you know, at least you have what you have, right? That's what those statues represent. That's what that flag represents. And it was an image of intimidation. Now it just, you just look like a fucking fool, right? And so the fact that they would have these on a military installation, we've got black soldiers fighting for American freedom, is absurd. Right. And the fact that it took this long is ridiculous. And then just goes to the issues that this country has never dealt with. Right. People get so mad about identity politics. And if you just stop saying about being black and blah, 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 blah. Like, again, y'all motherfuckers never ended the fucking war that you started with us in the first place. Right. Like, let this shit go and we'll let it go.
You know, dude, I used to see bumper stickers that said "Lee surrendered, I didn't," and I used to think, "Does that mean I can shoot you?"
Right.
just to defend my hometown of Buffalo, though, there was a stretch for where there was a really popular flag up there, and it was a bumper sticker up there, and it was the Confederate flag with the Ghostbusters thing through it, and it said, "You lost, get over it." One of my all-time favorite bumper stickers. Moving on. but anyway. You know, we talked about statues coming down. There was a protest last night around a Christopher Columbus statue in Chicago, and there was some violence between the police and the protesters. I guess 18 officers were hurt. About a dozen people were arrested. And you and I were talking before we started recording, and we posed the question, where does this stop? Like, I support peaceful protesting. We just talked about John Lewis to start the show. John Lewis got arrested 40 times in his life trying to, you know, protest and being a peaceful protester and dealing with, you know, civil rights dating back to the 60s. I understand why Christopher Columbus is a very offensive symbol to some people. There's the history of Italians defending Christopher Columbus that has been a little bit overblown. But where does it end?
You know, and I guess not so much where does it end, because I think if you look back to the—
Where do you draw the line, maybe, is a better way to
say it. You know, in terms of, like, what are you protesting, things like, listen, you want to protest Christopher Columbus, that's fine. You know, I mean, the protests in Selma went on for over a year,
right?
380-plus days. You know, they marched every day, and they protested every day, and they endured, you know, things that, you know, some of these people will never experience, right? But what we're seeing now are sort of these emotional reactions to things that aren't going to lead to this type of systemic changes that need to happen. You know, during the civil rights movement, we're talking about access to, you know, resources, and we're talking about access and rights and how people are legally viewed and what they're legally allowed to do and where they can go, and how they can, you know, earn a living and exist. Right. And coexist in this country that said, you aren't allowed to live here. You're not allowed to work there. You're not allowed to go to school here. Right. You aren't allowed to have access to these particular resources because the color of your skin. That was the country that we lived in. And they fought to change it. So they marched for over a year, and they fought and they dealt with everything that came with that. That's what they were fighting against. This is different. This isn't that. Now we're— I don't like the statue. It's old, and the guy who's in the statue represents bad stuff, and I don't like it. Take it down because it's a symbol of X, Y, and Z. Is it stopping you from doing anything? No, it's not stopping me, but it offends me. Okay, look, if shit offends you, that's fine. You want to protest it, that's fine. Don't fucking make a mess while you're doing it, though.
Right.
Seriously. Don't start tearing shit down. Don't fucking fight anybody. Just sit there and yell and scream about it. I have more important shit to do. Because tearing down a statue of Christopher Columbus, frankly, yeah, I think the Confederate monuments and all that shit should come down. But this idea that you're going to tear it down and that you're going to fight police officers and you're going to hurt the cause because you're a selfish asshole that's too fucking small-minded and narrow-minded to actually get that your bullshit actions are going to fuck around and get someone like me fucking killed. Because you can't get out of your own fucking way and stop stepping on your own dick when we're trying to have a fucking actual movement that's going to help everything. And you want to focus on fucking statues, right? And bullshit symbols, right? The bullshit symbols aren't what's keeping the poor black neighborhoods poor and black. Those fucking symbols aren't even in those neighborhoods, you dipshit. Right? Like, the issues that are affecting you and your people aren't that. You need to fight that. Those are the things that you need to be protesting. Fighting and getting pissed off about these symbols isn't doing jack shit except for getting your ass beat by cops. It's not helping anything. You're not resolving anything. You aren't fighting for me. You're fighting for your own selfish bullshit. Right? Because you don't have the fucking wherewithal to dig in and figure out what is actually keeping you back.
Well, the other aspect is, as tense as things are with the police right now, and they're tense for very good reasons. We've talked multiple times about unjustified shootings, and we forgot to talk about the we've not yet talked about the fact that the three guys in the Ahmaud Arbery case have pled not guilty. We can come back to that if we want. But
I mean, I'm not sure what there is to come back to. Like, I mean, I told you that I didn't think that they would because they're going to take their chances that they can
get one juror to.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
I'm glad you brought it up.
It's an example of you know, legitimate times where we've criticized the police and criticized the legal system. Times are really tense right now. If you think Christopher Columbus represents, you know, oppression of the Native American people, you can certainly make that case. And if you want to go through and petition and try to get that statue removed, go for it. I don't think I'd sign that petition, but I'm, you know, willing to listen. But to gather around and engage in violence, at some point it's got to stop. And it really – this is not a stance I'm proud to take, but I hate when it feeds the right-wing narrative. When I want to make a legitimate point and what comes back at me is, what about George Washington? You tear that down? I'm like, all right, I know, and I don't want to have this fight right now. So can we stick to stuff that matters?
Right. I mean, listen, if you give me a petition I don't know where I come out on Christopher Columbus. Honestly, any social justice warrior is going to attack me. I don't give a shit about Christopher Columbus. I don't. He was an asshole. He was a slaver. He was shitty towards Native Americans. I don't think he was the first person to discover the Western world. I think a lot of the shit he did is inaccurate and, you know, lies historical. And tall tales and who knows how accurate it is. We turned him into a mythological, you know, right. Great figure. It is what it is. I don't care about his statue being up. You know what I mean? What we do know, the accuracy. We accurately know what Confederate generals did, right? We know who they were fighting for. We know what they were fighting for. Their quotes are abound, and, you know, we have to relative accuracy. We know what they were about. I've got no issue signing a petition for Confederate statues and monuments to come down. It doesn't erase history. Throw it in a museum. We have books. Don't fuck up the books and you'll be fine. Right?
But the erase history argument drives me fucking crazy too.
Yes. I mean, it's weird because, again, you know, Nazi Germany doesn't have statues of Hitler, yet everyone really knows who fucking Hitler is.
We tore down Saddam's statue and celebrated it.
We still don't know who Saddam is, right? Like, I mean, just stop with this. But, you know, the whole argument of, you know, where does it stop? Like, listen, in terms of tearing down the statues, I think this idea that we're not going to tear down every statue of every person that owned a slave in this country, right? Slavery is American history, right? It's not black history. It is American history. Slavery is directly woven into the history and the fabric of our country. It is a black stain on who and what we are, but it is a part of who and what we are. And we had an opportunity to actually turn things around and actually use it as something that could have made this country even greater than it became, right? Had we kind of stuck to the initial principles that were set out after the Civil War in terms of how to compensate the slaves, how to truly free the slaves, how to, you know, it wasn't even necessarily integration, right? I mean, it was, we're going to put all the slaves here down in South Carolina. This is your land. This is your area. Do your thing. We're going to leave you alone. The land is farmable. Here's some mules and donkeys and do your thing, right? You stick to that. You leave us alone. You stay out of our way. You don't put up any barriers. You don't put it. You give us access to capital. You allow us to just do our thing. We leave you alone. You leave us alone. We police ourselves. You police yourselves, and everything is good. Who knows what this country looks like, you know? Or even if you get a little bit past that, right? And you go with fine, separate but equal, but truly equal,
right? Right? That's the problem with separate equal. Is
right. It was never truly equal. But had it been truly equal, then maybe it all could have worked out just fine. But you took every possible thing, every possible way this could have worked and been fine. You bastardized it for 150 years after the fucking Civil War, or 100 years after the Civil War, you know, tack on plus another 10 or 20 years of you know, being undermined. Once the laws and ordinances were changed, another 10 to 15, 20 years of it being undermined by people who just couldn't let it go. And now you have this, right? Right. I mean, and now you have this anger and this foment and this ability for people to drive wedges in and narratives and all this other stuff. And now you want to say, all right, well, let go of the whole identity thing. Well, I can't because you stapled it on me, right? And now I can let go of it all I want, but the reality is it's still being used against me, right? Yeah. I mean, and you know, when people talk about that whole identity thing, look, in Italy, in France, they're going through the same thing. And in Italy and France, they don't – like in France, they're actually not – legally, they're not allowed to keep demographic records based on race, right? Because – and for them, it actually goes back to the – it goes back to World War II and the Jews. They did that, and then they counted up all the Jews. They took them out, and then they killed them,
right?
Right? So now it's illegal to actually keep demographic stuff. You are just a Frenchman, right? You're just French. Yet France – even though they don't acknowledge race at all in that country, legally they don't. They're not supposed to. They're not allowed to. They're still fighting these same issues, right? And black people in France, they consider themselves French. They don't consider themselves black, right? Like they look at African Americans and they look at us, and it's a weird conversation to have with a black Frenchman because they don't necessarily understand how we identify ourselves as black Americans. You're just American, right? Which makes, in a lot of ways, it makes sense, and we should. Yet France is having their own issues with race right now,
right?
And they're very similar issues in which the way black people are treated different by the police, and you know, with certain aspects and access into professional and into different professions and things like that. So it's just something that, as a world, right, as much as we want it to go away, it's not going to go away just because we just ignore it and stop acknowledging it.
Right. And without being honest about it, right? I mean,
That's the biggest thing. Like, first, let's just acknowledge how fucked up things were, right? Like, stop trying to say, oh, well, it wasn't that bad, and it was this and that, and stop trying to blame it and pin it on other people. Oh, it was all the Democrats. Like, no, it was everybody, right? It was a fucking tag team effort. Like, stop with this. Like, I don't give a fuck about the Democrat. Like, people always want to say, well, yeah, that did happen, but it was a Democrat who did it.
Well, like, I don't
understand why that fucking matters.
Can I get one more dumb argument out there that just, I've seen multiple people post, there were black slave owners too. Okay, that does not make it right. And you're talking about the exception of the exception. Just stop it with that. Well, here's a picture of a guy from, okay, irrelevant. Okay. That doesn't mean it was right.
Right. I mean, but that goes along the lines of, like, we've got black cops who beat the shit out of, shoot at, and kill black people too. Right. Like, like just because a black person doesn't absolve, doesn't change the impact of the action, the system, or whatever, the fact that that system existed at all is the problem. Whoever perpetrated it doesn't fucking matter. And so we have to fix these systems and stop, like, focusing on these symbols, right? Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you can get rid of all the statues you want, right? Like, what if they just, all right, fine, we'll get rid of all the statues, right? We'll get rid of all the statues, but we're also not going to change a single thing else, right? I mean, then what good does getting rid of the fucking statues do?
Right.
Right, because that's essentially what you want. Okay, you've torn down the statue of General Lee or Columbus, you know? I mean, someone tore down a statue of Frederick Douglass.
I heard about that.
Right. Now the question is, who did it, right? Was it, I mean, like, because everyone is saying, is pointing fingers, Black Lives Matter going so far because Frederick Douglass, XYZ. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that could have been some retaliation from, some
Robert Lee statue coming down, right?
You know, some people on the other side. But again, tearing down these statues doesn't get us anywhere.
Agreed. And doing it in an organized, legal manner, saying, you know, we voted and we want the statue removed from our city square, 100% for it.
Or, you know what, here's the deal. Tearing down a statue is like you're putting the cart before the horse, right? If you do the systemic changes that you actually should be fighting for, then you can get the statues removed a whole hell of a lot easier, right? The people that are in power right now don't really give a fuck about the statues. So you shift the power to people who actually do give a fuck about the statues, and then you'll be able to get them out easier. This whole thing, well, we're just going to fucking ram it up your ass to people who don't want it rammed up their ass, you're not having success with that. So maybe replace the people, and then the ass ramming gets a lot easier.
You're right.
Just go with it.
I don't think I'm going to put that on a poster. Ass ramming gets a lot easier. But all right, we got a couple of minutes left, and we got two stories we should talk about. One is
Let's skip that one. We can save that one because I don't think that one will change by the time the next time we meet. So let's just go ahead and jump into the sports story because I think it actually has some connections. We dropped a sports extra last week.
Which I really enjoyed, by the way.
Yeah, no, it was good. I enjoyed it. It was
a lot of good feedback, too. Which I think Ben from My Whiskey Den sent us a really nice letter.
Yeah, so thanks, Ben. And, you know, Dave in Philly also dropped a dime. He didn't like my comparison to the Yankees. And
the Indians? All
right. Right. No, he didn't say anything about the Indians. Just like, you know, the Yankees. And I didn't quite understand his point. I think he's very passionate about having to change the name because it's racist.
Meaning the change of the Redskins. The name of the Redskins.
Right, yeah. Right. And again, I'm all for changing the name of the Redskins. I'm all for changing the Indians, right? Especially like their logo, which they have gotten rid of, right. Chief Wahoo. You know, I think the name changes that are, you know, I don't necessarily know that the Braves need to be changed, right? I mean, like, I'm not sure, like, who's being offended by that. Like, so we can't just, now we can't even reference Native American culture. That seems
that's kind of erasing history there.
Well, it's not erasing history. It's okay, not, like, fine. Let's not all go right, too yeah, far. Let's just be common sense about it. Right. Like, I think we should be able to acknowledge, like, listen, like, you know, Native Americans were brave warriors. They were sure. Great warriors. They were brilliant strategists. You know, they were outnumbered and, you know, technology got the better of them with this whole thing. But I mean, like, there's a history there that's worth acknowledging in these, you know, gladiator type sports. And so the idea that we can't use them or reference them at all seems to be taking it too far. I don't think the Braves need to be changed. I don't think the Chiefs need to be changed. I don't necessarily think the Indians need to be changed, but if they change it, I'm not upset about it at all. I mean, I think some of the things they've done with the logos, with the block C, with the feather, there's a hat that I still want to get. It's an all black hat with a single feather on it that's kind of shaded and shadowed. That's a badass hat that I have to get my hands on before they do this big change. I never had an issue with the Redskins logo. I had an issue with the actual name, the Redskins. And I agree that that name should be changed. Change comes the logo. It's happening. But the reason why we're bringing this up is because what we said on the show, we almost released the show probably about a day or so too early, because what then broke was, you know, we said, well, this is the right time. You know, Dan Snyder kind of got pressured into it because of the Black Lives Matter movement and the protest and equality. No. I don't think that was it. So a bomb
now drops. For the rest of the story.
Right. Now the other shoe drops, and there's a huge sexual harassment story coming out of the NFL Washington football team, just about all sorts of inappropriate behavior. It was a huge buzz on social media, especially on Twitter, that this story was coming. The Washington Post kind of held people at bay. The sports media did the really annoying thing that I hate is – hey, this other news outlet has this story that's going to drop. I don't know anything, but it's really important. So you need to pay attention to me because when it drops, it's going to be huge, right? So then they get a bunch of retweets and then you realize they don't know anything about the story. There's no information. So you're just sitting there waiting. And they're basically just drumming up all this like kind of suspense for a story to come out of the Washington Post. Well, the story's ugly in terms of the amount of just really, really bad dude behavior that was coming out of the Washington franchise. A lot of people think that, well, initially were thinking that this was going to be enough to get Dan Snyder to sell the team. I don't think it is, just knowing the NFL. You know, a lot of feminists are definitely going to be upset about that. You know, like, how's he going to be, you know, this is the problem with the NFL, the misogyny, the racism, blah, blah, blah. I don't necessarily disagree, but things are what they are. And this, I don't think, is going to be enough to drive him out, much to the despair of the Washington football fans who don't like him. But I think that the whole, hey, let's change the name, was a way to get out ahead of this story about sexual harassment, to maybe take a little bit of the sting off. And I'm not sure if it worked, but maybe it did. I don't know.
Well, I think it also changes the narrative about why he changed the name.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So, you know, if he would have said, I'll change the name after the story dropped, people would be saying, oh, you're changing the name because you're this close to having the league vote you out as an owner and to lose your rights to the team. So he's trying to be the good guy before he has to explain the bad behavior under his watch in the organization. And I don't know if anyone's specifically pointed to Dan Snyder. And I would be willing to bet that in most major sports organizations, you can find things like this. The former president of football operations from the Bills got fired very quietly. Well, not very quietly, but very under very mysterious circumstances. And there are a lot of people who think that he was tolerating behavior like this in the organization and perhaps even committing it. And next thing you know, Russ Brandon was no longer head of Bills, the president of the Bills football operations. And that could be in part because the person who runs the Bills operation from the ownership standpoint is Kim Pegula, the wife of the owner.
Yeah, and it's funny. I brought her up in another a guy I went to law school with. He and I were having like a debate about, you know, issues in the NFL, and you know, he is Asian. Not that it matters, I guess. And like I said, we went to law school together, but that's kind of my point. What we were doing, he was saying that he's not sure if he can be a fan of the NFL anymore because they need guaranteed contracts. They need more black, executives, more black coaches. And he just doesn't know if he can continue to spend his dollars on the NFL. And I said, look, man, you do what you want to do, whatever makes you feel good. If you enjoy the NFL, this is my stance. If you enjoy the NFL, fucking watch it. Because the bottom line is the changes that people want to happen in the NFL aren't going to happen until you get black owners at the table. The average owner of the NFL is 60 years old, right? 99% of them are white, or 97% are white. The only two that are not white are Shahid Khan and Kim Pegula.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
And Kim Pegula is Korean, right? She was adopted and she came to Buffalo back in, you know, when she was young, and she grew up in Buffalo and she magically married
Mr. really rich guy
from Pegula, and because she worked for him, and who knows how that went down, but whatever. Now, listen, she's been a good advocate in the NFL for diversity, right? Like, her name's all over all the diversity stuff that's in the NFL, but I don't know if she's truly fighting for black coaches and all that other shit, but hey, I mean, her name's on it, so fine. But the changes that the people want in the NFL to come, whether it's related to race or sex or whatever it might be, those changes don't come until you have changes in ownership, right? Now, you have women owners, but these are old school women who are not in tune with the young, new feminist movement, right? Like, so the things that women want that argue that are wrong with the NFL, those changes are way, way, way down the line. You know, and they may come as you may get some help with some more progressive ownership as things turn over. But listen, most of these guys are in their 60s. They're not necessarily old enough. Like, you're not going to see a big die off anytime soon. The NFL makes too much money for anyone to sell off. There's too much value. And some of these guys, listen, they are so rich that they would rather bury the league than give in to the demands of anybody. Right. So that's not sitting at the table. right? Yeah. If you are not sitting at the table, fuck off. That is literally what they are telling you and what they have been telling you. Now, if that is enough for you to take your dollars, go ahead. I completely understand. I will not argue with you, but I'm just telling you that it's not going to do anything and that I'm going to keep watching and I'm going to keep enjoying it because I just do.
I'm in the same boat, and I would say that the NFL ownership is maybe the most exclusive club in America. I mean, it's 32. There's 32 spots. Everyone in that is a billionaire or multi-billionaire. We've talked about Jerry Jones's yacht enough times that we don't need to bring it up again. Snyder's
yacht. I mean, Dan Snyder's yacht.
It's not as good as
the funny thing is, Dan Snyder's yacht is absurd. Absurd beyond belief. And Jerry Jones, like, three-upped him.
He's like, one-upped is not enough.
Right. Like, I mean, which goes to show you how much money these guys have. Like, listen, you have half the owners in the NFL, at least half the owners in the NFL, if not more, are worth more than Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump's net worth is at somewhere around $4 billion-ish. And I mean, there's multiple guys in the NFL by double digits who dwarf him. So, I mean, this idea of exclusivity is that's an understatement, right, of how exclusive this club is that these guys are in. You know, there's 540 billionaires in the United States. 540. 32 of them are owners in the NFL.
And
Donald 31, Trump, actually. 31, because Cons.
Green Bay, oh, and Green Bay owns a
that's city. True. So 30.
But, which, by the way, I would love it if every team was owned by the city. I would love that. Right. But anyway, we should probably wrap this up. You want any closing shots?
No, just you know, with John Lewis's passing, just it's if you get a chance, you know, just kind of look into what he was about. I think he represents a lot of good in this country. You know, I mean, he did a lot of fighting when things weren't great, but he fought for a lot of good things. You know, he was a man that was very, you know, giving of his time and of his energy for other people. He made a lot of sacrifices, and you know, it wasn't always right, but he fought for the right reasons. And so it's worth getting to know his history and know his legacy. You know, in a time when you know, you just mentioned black people of certain prestige and levels, and it foments anger and division and things like that because everyone is so divided and picking sides. Just take a pause from that. And chances are, if you're listening to our show, you're probably not too far right wing. So, you know, but if you know, like, yeah, he's the type of person that should bring people together. You know, I mean, and he did a lot. Like, listen, John Lewis is the guy. He reached across the aisle. There are a lot of people, a lot of other congressmen that consider, you know, conservative, white Southern congressmen that literally genuinely will tell you that they considered him a friend and they loved that man. You know, people that you would not, you know, you or I or other people would not align with politically. He was that type of guy. So his legacy is worth taking a look at and seeing if there's anything of value taking from it just for yourself.
I'm not going to add on to that. So we are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. Thank you for listening. You can email me, jim@whiskeycongress.com. Email Steve at whiskeycongress.com. Thanks for listening. We're out of here.